Thank you very much. Good morning. This morning I'm going to talk to you about some of the work we've been doing in St. Louis with African-American parents of teen and preteen girls all around the issues of human papillomavirus and HPV vaccination. So just to begin, I do have a financial relationship with Merck. I own Merck stock, less than $5,000 worth, but Merck makes Gardasil, which is one of the two HPV vaccines that's available. My two co-authors, Dr. Veta Saunders-Thompson, who's actually in the audience, and Dr. Sherry Notaro, have no financial relationships to disclose. So I just wanted to begin by putting things in context a little bit, and just to give you a feeling for some epi around HPV and cervical cancer. And HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection in the United States. The CDC estimates there are about 6 million new cases diagnosed every year. And it's linked to a number of health conditions, most notably is cervical cancer. And although there are over 100 different strains of HPV, two of them, type 16 and 18, cause the bulk of cervical cancers worldwide. So when we look at prevalence of HPV, HPV 16 has about a 20% prevalence in the African-American population. That compares to about a 12.5% prevalence in the Caucasian population. When you look at cervical cancer, which is, as I said, pretty much the most notable cancer linked to HPV, although it also does have relationships to oral cancer and other anal genital cancers. When we look at cervical cancer and the age-adjusted incidence of mortality in the United States, total population rates are largely driven by our Caucasian population, but we do see racial disparities with the African-American population. Higher incidence and higher mortality. In Missouri, our mortality and incidence rates are actually higher than the national averages. Our African-American mortality from cervical cancer is actually closer to 6.4 per 100,000. So we do see a bit more of a problem with it in Missouri. When we look at prevention and screening related to cervical cancer, there are currently two HPV vaccines available on the market, Gardasil and Cervarix. Gardasil is a quadrivalent vaccine, so it protects against four types of HPV, including the two that are causing cervical cancer and two strains that are linked to genital warts. It was approved back in June of 2006 for girls ages 9 to 26. And last October, approval was extended to include males who were 9 to 26. The same day that Gardasil approval was extended, the FDA also approved Cervarix, and that is for women 10 to 25-year-olds. And Cervarix is a bivalent vaccine, so it's only protecting against HPV 16 and 18. Right now, ACIP recommends vaccination for females and males in the 11 to 13-year-old age group, and they recommend a catch-up vaccination for teens who are older, going up to that 26-year-old range. When we look at HPV vaccination awareness and prevalence in the United States, we're actually not doing quite as well as certain other countries. Our awareness data show, from the 2000 HINTS data, show that about a third of those who were interviewed at the time were aware of HPV vaccination options. And that data came out about, it was collected about a year after Gardasil was approved. So we definitely have had a lot of ad campaigns and a second vaccine come on the market since then. But even with all of that attention given to vaccination, our behavioral risk factor surveillance data shows that only about a third of eligible girls are actually vaccinated. And that's echoed in several other national survey data sets that have collected that type of information. Now, one caveat with that prevalence, the data do not necessarily distinguish between those individuals that have started the vaccination series and actually completed the vaccination series. They also tend to focus on girls 13 to 17, which is slightly older than where ACIP recommendations are for vaccination. But just to kind of put that in context, countries such as the UK, Australia, Scotland have reported up to 75% vaccination coverage in their age-eligible populations. So the CDC data, National Immunization Survey data, indicate that vaccination rates are similar in African Americans and whites, and that again has been echoed in the BRFSS data. But there are geographic variations in vaccination coverage. And so You know, some of these things are what motivated us to start looking at the African-American population within St. Louis, that, you know, we have a problem with cervical cancer that's greater than the national average. And so even if vaccination rates are similar by race and by ethnicity, we sort of have motivation to be looking at ways to improve vaccination coverage within the African-American population, specifically within St. Louis. So we conducted, back in 2009, a survey study that really looked to determine the knowledge level of HPV and HPV vaccination options within African-American parents in St. Louis, looking at issues about acceptability of the vaccine, not just the HPV vaccine, but we had questions about vaccination in general in there, because in Missouri we also don't do very well with childhood vaccinations in general. We wanted to look at some characteristics, some demographic characteristics, personal characteristics, cultural attitudes, social factors, environmental factors that might affect vaccination behavior and intention to vaccinate. So the population that we identified was a group of African American parents. They were self-identified as African American, and they had daughters within the 9 to 17 year old age range. So we hit on that lowest end of who the vaccine has been approved for. And the daughter must not have had an HPV diagnosis. And for individuals that had multiple daughters, we asked them to think of the daughter with the most recent birthday and use her in terms of that screening criteria. And so we had a community sample of about 200 parents. They were recruited from a range of places within the community, health centers, a father support group. We had a mobile recruitment van that went out and looked at census blocks that had over 75% African American residents and went door-to-door recruitment on that, recruited from laundromats, grocery stores, things like that. We also, so the 200 participants that screened as eligible and completed the survey, of that group, we also conducted qualitative interviews on about 30 individuals. So I'm not going to cover that qualitative data really today, but we did explore some of these issues in a little bit more detail through that qualitative piece. And so, as I said, you know, our major outcomes that we were interested in were looking at vaccination status of the daughters, as well as intent to get the vaccine in those that had not yet vaccinated, and assessing issues, as I said earlier, about awareness and knowledge, looking at levels of medical mistrust, religiosity, attitudes towards sexual behavior of teens, and that type of thing. So the population that we wound up looking at was had an average age of 40 years old, was largely employed, largely had less than a high school education or less, and an annual income of household income of less than $20,000. Despite some of those factors, the population largely had a place that they identified as a healthcare home, as well as a regular pediatrician that they took their daughters to. We then looked at the group of people. We asked individuals whether or not they'd heard about HPV prior to the survey. And of those that had heard of HPV, they were significantly more likely to be female, to have a higher education, to have a higher income level, to have a higher association with a healthcare home and a regular pediatrician. The only difference between those that had and had not heard of HPV that was not significant was marital status. So, as I said, of the 200 individuals we surveyed, 124 of them were aware of HPV prior to the survey, so our analysis was actually restricted to that group of 124. And of that group, about 22% had vaccinated their daughters. Another third or so had never considered vaccination at all. And the bulk was a mix of individuals who intended to vaccinate their daughters but had not yet begun the process, or individuals who had made a decision not to vaccinate at all. But when we looked at the level of knowledge, we actually, of the 124 individuals, only about 25% of them answered the knowledge questions in a way that indicated they really had a good handle on HPV knowledge. We had a series of items, which are summarized here, but we had a series of items that asked essentially true-false questions about HPV, and the two that are in bold, HPV causing herpes and pap smears always detecting HPV, were the two false answers on the list. But we had, I said, about a quarter of parents who actually answered 80% of the items correctly. We had another quarter of the parents who answered less than half the items correctly. And what was really interesting to us was the numbers of people that indicated they didn't know whether or not the statement was true or false. And admitting that they didn't know, but really pointing to us that there was a fundamental lack of knowledge about HPV. And without that baseline knowledge, how could parents be able to make informed decisions for their child's healthcare? The other piece that was really interesting to us was just under half the parents didn't even know that HPV was a sexually transmitted infection, and that was a huge worry to us. So those that had heard of HPV, when we asked them about benefits of vaccination, about half or slightly more felt that it was a beneficial decision to vaccinate their daughters, that the vaccine could prevent future problems for their child, that it would help reduce their worry about their child's health down the line. So it was nice to see that about half the population was in agreement that there was some benefit there. However, when we asked about barriers to vaccination, one of the things that did surprise us was that a lot of the things that typically come up as barriers, things like cost, transportation, access to the vaccine itself, those things did not come up as playing a role in being a barrier to vaccination. What really seemed to play more of an issue was fear about side effects, both short-term and long-term unknown risks of the vaccine. And when we did the qualitative interviews, some of the issues that came out were not side effects, not like nausea or soreness at the site of the vaccine, but things like paralysis, long-term effects for fertility, effects on the female reproductive organs, things like that. So, again, a lack of education about what we do know about the side effects. One of the interesting things as well was that one individual had commented in the interviews that the pediatrician actually said, well, your daughter is an early teen, but I would recommend holding off for about 5 years until we know more about side effects. And 5 years would have put that daughter in about the 18, 19-year-old group, which might very well be too late to be vaccinated. Of the individuals who were vaccinated, we only had about 25 of that 124 that were vaccinated. So it wasn't much we could do in terms of multivariate analysis because of that sample size being so small. But what we did look at was what factors potentially had a significant relationship to vaccination status, and found that pediatrician recommendations stood out by far, that communication piece with the doctors was really, really important, and that parents of vaccinated daughters were more worried about their children contracting an STI. So that, again, plays back to that lack of knowledge in about half the population not even realizing that HPV was an STI. So some of the things that we're doing right now to move this forward are looking at working with our community partners, both community organizations as well as the healthcare community, to find ways to really bridge that communication gap and to find venues for parents to have the opportunity to discuss HPV, vaccination, sexual behavior, those types of issues. And so we are trying to look at mechanisms to help get parents the knowledge that they need in order to be able to make informed decisions. One of the things we're doing right now, or we're looking at doing rather, is we've got a grant under review right now, which looks at a decision-making tool. And that tool actually would be implemented using these computer-based kiosks in community locations, which we've had success with in terms of mammography screening and getting information to this population and placing those in places like laundromats and things like that. We are also doing some work with the United Way 211 system in Missouri to look at some cancer education and screening issues through that, so another venue of getting information out to this population. So, just wanted to thank our funders for giving us the opportunity to collect these data, as well as our research assistant, Mimi Seo, for helping us with all of our data entry and management. So, thanks.